This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
I'm Noomi Gilder.
I'm Harriet Taylor.
And you're listening to Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief.
Our picks of this week's tech headlines.
And what we think of them.
We're aiming for 50% informative, 50% fun.
Let's dive in.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief. You've got myself, Harriet Taylor.
And I'm Noomi Gilder. Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm really good. I'm enjoying the sun up north in England. What about you?
Yes, sunny down here in the southeast as well. Finally, thank you.
I'd love to hear it. I mean, it's been a while, hasn't it?
It has. And it was like at the weekend, I was like, I made sure I was out in the sun as much as possible. And it was amazing, like, how much better I felt just being in the sun.
Honestly, yesterday I took the chance to get the train into work for a change because, you know, the weather was quite nice. And just walking to the train station with the sun on my face, I was like, oh my God, I should do this every day. And then I'm like, well, it actually kind of rains all the time. But it was so nice.
But
such a great
nice.
Little experience.
You got to grab onto it.
It makes you smile, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. It's amazing how simple we are, really, when you boil it down. Just put
us
in the
humans.
Sun and we're happy.
Bit of vitamin D and we're sorted.
So, going from being happy, we start with some sad news this morning.
Aww. So, yeah, Microsoft has announced Skype will close in May.
Rest in peace.
Yeah, RIP. It's like tied to my childhood.
Yeah.
At this point.
First released in 2003.
Wow. Okay. Yes, that was when I was about 10 years old.
That's crazy.
I remember using Skype loads. Do you remember the MSN Messenger days?
Yeah, yeah.
So I feel like there was MSN Messenger for typing. Every so often you do, like, you know, your video calls on it. But Skype was like the main video hub for me and my friends.
And like
for
the
some
first
reason.
Kind of like audio calls as well. Because I feel like they first started, you know, their kind of selling point was you can do international calls for free. You don't have to pay. Do you remember you used to be able to, I remember like seeing these in like Dixon's and Curry's. You could buy like a phone handset
that you would
plug. Yeah, a Skype phone that you'd plug into your computer to make a Skype call.
Yeah, I remember this because I moved abroad to Spain when I was younger.
Yeah.
And we used to speak to my family back in the UK on Skype because it was free. I mean, the ones that were like able to get on Skype, because I think even then not everyone had computers still.
Yeah. Or they were like, I don't know how to download this. It was, I think, such a core like memory for so many people. I think exactly that if you like lived abroad or you had family abroad, or friends abroad, it was so amazing to help, like, communicate and feel closer.
Do you not think that this is potentially the biggest bag fumble of all time, though?
My God, yes. I thought about this so much. Like, we're coming up to 5 years on now from when the UK first went into lockdown during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I remember when we're all, you know, starting to do working remotely, distance learning and everything. And I was like, wow, Skype, this is your time, mate. This is what you've been training for. And then it was suddenly like, let's all use this new thing called Zoom.
Right? Even like Microsoft Teams outdid Skype at that point.
Yeah.
And aren't they made by the same company? Right?
Yeah. Like, it was so
I didn't
crazy.
Get it.
But yeah, you're right. The biggest bag fumble.
That's just how I'm seeing this, because obviously I've got like very fond memories, but I'm like, considering we've moved to a very sort of video focused world, especially those years over the pandemic, but even now afterwards, like when I first joined the company I work for now, they still had they had Skype before we had Slack. So people used to just talk on Skype, and then since we've sort of migrated to use Slack more, no one uses Skype at all, but we are using Teams for calls. So it just makes me wonder, like, and maybe it was a decision by Microsoft. Maybe they decided that they just didn't want to put any money investment marketing into Skype anymore because they're going to change the focus on maybe more business side of things. And Skype wasn't always just business Skype, was it?
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think that there will have been some decision behind it. But I also think it's kind of interesting. It just shows kind of a reflection as well of you can never tell or guarantee what users are gonna do. Like, you can already have a functioning product and then, you know, a new and trendy one comes along and suddenly everyone's using that. Like, I think it's such a fascinating kind of bit of user behavior that it's perfectly functional. It does the job, but we prefer other things that do the same job.
People with the shiny new thing.
Yeah. And I guess also, you know, originally Skype was kind of like the only thing that you could use to have voice over IP or video or whatever. Whereas now it's integrated into WhatsApp, into Facebook, into Instagram.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, rather than it being you need your own tool for it, it's like a functionality that's now added.
It's just a
in.
Given.
Yeah.
Like if you don't have video or like calls, you know, you're not going to be a player in this area. Like you need to be providing more than just calls, I suppose. Although what does Zoom do? I guess Zoom's good at like bringing lots of people together on the same call.
Yeah, like so conference that's what calling, they've transcribing, recording. I guess that's how it was able to kind of excel. But yeah. So, and it had a great call sound as well.
Yes, I can't make it. Boop, oh, you're boop, doing boop. It.
So there you go. End of
quite
Skype.
Relaxing.
It's closing in May, so you've got a couple more months to use it if you want to give it a good send off.
It definitely feels like part of the history of the internet.
Yeah.
Computing, you know.
We'll remember you.
We'll remember it fondly. Definitely. It's had a good run.
It's had a good run. Moving from like the history of the internet to the future.
Dun, dun, dun.
See what I did there? Some really cool news came out this week from Amazon joining the quantum race. They've announced a new cat qubit powered chip. We were talking about this on the pod a couple months ago. It was Google announced their quantum chip. So it's like a lot of players now in the field to progress this. And obviously the idea of quantum computing is that we have much bigger processing power, so we're able to solve more complicated problems that our traditional computers struggle with. And I remember when we talked about this the first time, because it's using quantum physics, nobody really, I think, unless you are a quantum computer scientist, understands how they work. And the way that they describe it is they just say that it exploits the strange properties of matter and energy at very small scales, and they're able to do computing with it. But this story from Amazon is they've built this prototype chip, and the idea is what's special about it is one of the problems with quantum computing is that they're really sensitive to noise in the environment. So heat, electromagnetic interference from mobile phones, even apparently cosmic rays from space.
What?
Can make them have errors. So
that's very sensitive.
They're so sensitive. Calm down. It's not that big a deal. So apparently this Ocelot prototype uses these things called cat qubits that will help it be more error resistant. So it'll help correct those errors. And they've said that it's got 5 cat qubits out of a total of 14 components, which could correct quantum errors by up to 90%. So it's quite exciting.
It's a game changer.
Yeah, right?
Laughing because I was just reading a part of the article then, and it says, Amazon says, taken alongside other recent breakthroughs in the industry, its work means useful quantum computers are likely to be with us sooner than previously thought. And it's making me think, how many non-useful quantum computers do we have?
We got that one over there, but it doesn't do much. It just plays Pong really fast.
I don't know why, it just tickled me.
But yeah, I mean, I quite like this article because it is a really cool thing. But like the kind of stance on it is like, this is just going to be helpful. You know, we haven't got to mass production of quantum computers yet, but we're kind of pushing the needle.
We're nearly there.
We're nearly there. This is going to help.
Yeah, like, so I'm just reading. So AWS, which is the cloud computing service, they would like to offer quantum computing services to its customers. I just want to know what customers are going to be doing with quantum computing. Like, it's going to make things so much quicker, but what is it we're going to make?
I don't know. I guess it's this kind of thing of like, if you have the power to, you know, solve highly computational problems,
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's also kind of like the thing of, you know, the potential of AI tools, of something that would take a long time or would be really difficult for a traditional computer. So maybe that's some form of data processing, or maybe that's some form of calculation. So I'm kind of expecting it would be really useful in definitely areas of research, but maybe, you know, industries like finance, where you've got to deal with a lot of data.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Like, even sort of like government departments, you know, with like lots of data on populations, like there'll be a lot of data points just for someone's, like, I don't know, social security number, address, like telephone and stuff like that. So I can imagine just scanning a database like that takes a lot of time. Whereas you could do a lot more with something like this.
Yeah, or like maybe developing stuff for space. Yes. If you've got to do like modelling of like aerodynamic modelling on spacecraft and stuff like that, and running simulations, maybe that is
making a new Sims.
Yes, exactly. All of the important stuff.
No, can you imagine the graphics and the physics though, if you had a quantum computer running the Sims 5?
I mean, people just, society would cease to function because everyone would just be like locked in.
The Matrix, literally.
Yeah, exactly. Which is maybe also what AWS are planning on doing.
Just getting all of us like linked onto the servers.
Here we go.
So apparently a lady called Heather West, who follows the quantum computing industry as a research manager for the International Data Corporation and has been briefed on this new chip by Amazon in advance of publication, says the results are an advancement rather than a breakthrough. Now, is this someone being a bit, I don't know, what's the word, giving a bit of tea, being like, it's not actually a big thing, it's just it's just a little minor, or is it someone being salty?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because to us it sounds like a big improvement, right?
Yeah. But I guess maybe it's this thing, because it's such a new technology. You know how sometimes we get ahead of ourselves, like there's like a little bit of research done or something and they're saying, this could mean that we could do this. And then suddenly we're imagining the future where we're flying and we're on Mars and stuff like that. So maybe she's just like managing our expectations of like, this is great and this is going to help us, but don't expect to be able to buy a quantum computer from Currys in
like,
the next 2 weeks.
Let's be realistic, huns.
Yeah.
Hey, you say 2 weeks, so I reckon give it a few years. So I'm going to place a bet that we can buy some of these super-powered chips in a few years.
How many years?
Well, now I'm starting to think, I feel like there's a lot of variables that are coming into play, such as global warming, are we going to be on this planet? But if nothing weird happens, I'm going to say 3 years.
Okay. Oscar Painter of AWS Center for Quantum Computing, he thinks it'll be like in the next decade. Said next decade looking more and more realistic. But he did say that 5 years ago, he would have said 20 or 30 years. So he's now like halved it. Maybe in another good couple of months, he'll say 3 years.
Yeah. So we're just bringing that forward, basically. Yeah, no, it's really cool. It's really cool. Like, I feel like every week now we're getting like more and more breakthroughs from a technology point of view.
It's a really exciting.
Even like Newsweek's, where it seems like it's a bit slow, you can always count on there being some sort of AI or like, you know, chip or quantum computing like tidbit that's been happening out there. So I'm here for it.
And fingers crossed for super-powered Sims.
Yeah, literally. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed that doesn't happen, because my life would be over. Like, I have no self-control when it comes to some computer games. Like, if it's good, it's good. That'll be me gone for a month. Okay. I'll have to get it out of my system.
Let's hope that they don't then, and they only use it for sensible.
Yeah, because I'd be doing the podcast and playing Sims at the same time.
Oh no, I've set them on fire again.
Yeah, damn it. But yeah, on the same sort of vein of AI, I mean, a bit different, but Meta has brought facial recognition tools in to spot celeb scam adverts to the UK. Now, if you're not aware of or if you don't live in the UK, there have been quite a lot of scams online when people have a click around, especially on Facebook as well, where they'll use celebrity faces to sort of lure you into giving away data, money. It's happened quite a lot with Martin Lewis from Money Supermarket. I've seen him talk about it on the TV numerous times, telling people don't believe that it's him, even though they're using his face. And I feel like he mentioned he does report it a lot and they'll take it down, but it'll then just reappear like a few weeks later.
Well, I mean, celebrities, such, you know, even just their face is such a powerful tool. Like every time I see Martin's face, I'm like, right, I'm ready for some practical money advice. And when you're just scrolling, you know, you can definitely see how it would happen. But because also I think it's clever scamming because you're mimicking their organic content anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah, you are mimicking. That's one thing that I was just trying to get my head around then, actually, because obviously they're going to ban these adverts, right, that are the scams. But how are they going to tell the difference between a scam and a real advert?
Yeah.
They've confirmed the facial recognition technology will be used to give users a new way to verify their identity to regain access to a locked or compromised account. So it looks like there's other use for this as well. I think they kind of do this already, though, because I was trying to get back into my Facebook account once because I've not logged in for a while. I couldn't remember my password and I had to do this little screen. I don't know if you've ever done it before, where you have to look to the left and the right while you're on a video.
Oh, wow.
And it'll tell you if it's you or not. That was like a few months ago. So I don't know if it's the same or if they've made it a bit more
advanced. I know that there's been a like Monzo. When you start an account with Monzo, you have to like do a video call. So I know that there's quite a few like companies that use it, but I guess maybe this has got an extra level of complexity because it's using AI to monitor that video and to analyze that video. In terms of like how it actually works to identify whether it's a scam, they're probably not going to tell us because then we'd be able to work out how to get around it.
Well, I just read it here. It says, technology works by spotting an advert it believes to be a scam and contains an image of a public figure the platform has identified as at risk from so-called celeb bait. And then it will use the facial recognition tools to compare faces in the ad against images from the public figure's official profile. So are they checking to see if the public figure's also published content about the ad? And if they haven't, they might be like, oh, this could potentially be misleading.
That's a good point. Yeah. And then I guess there's the classic case of, you know, how weird do the hands look?
Yeah. Is there an extra finger?
Is there an extra finger? What's happening with the eyes? What's happening with the hair? Is half of the hair missing, like halfway down? There are these features which are obviously, you know, might disappear as AI gets better, but I wonder if they do kind of like look for those artifacts as well.
Yeah. I guess it's like a race, right, of AI being used for good versus AI being used for bad, because whoever is already making these scams are now going to know this is out there. So they're going to be thinking of ways to game this now.
Yeah. I think I've said this on the podcast before because we've talked, you know, we talk about technology and scams a lot. They're very smart. They know what they're doing. And I don't think we're, you know, I think we're always going to be... You're always going to have people that want to exploit technology for personal gain and for money. So I think we're always going to be like almost playing catch up to that.
Yeah.
Like they're going to find a new way to exploit it. And we have to find a new way to stop them from doing that. I say we like I'm like on the internet police.
We're on the front line.
It's nothing to do with me. But Godspeed.
But you know what? We've got to stay aware, stay safe, do what we can. Yeah, but I think this is good, though. I'm liking, like, you know, we're starting to get a bit more traction to get people protected because Naga Manchetti is a BBC presenter. She does a lot of, like, the news in the morning and stuff. And she said that she discovered deep fake images of herself online being used in scam ads. So there's... You know, and that's just someone that I wouldn't say is like a celebrity in the sense of she's on TV shows or like a singer or anything. That's just a standard person that you'd see on a day-to-day basis that you probably would trust because she's giving you the news on TV.
And I think maybe that's, you know, these are the kind of people that are going to be used the most. Someone like Naga or Martin, they have integrity. And you trust what they say and they are a trusted figure. So I guess you're not going to be as critical. Your guard's down a little bit. They're very sneaky. They know what they're doing.
They're so sneaky. We just got to be one step ahead, like you said, because it can be devastating, the impact, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think we've definitely talked about this on the pod before as well. You know, especially now with the advancement of AI-generated images and video and audio, and also just in general, the dissemination of fake news. Like, we just have to be critical when navigating the internet, because there are so many ways now that you can be fed false information or scammed. And you just got to stay vigilant.
You've got to do your own work. It just, I think it gets tiring though sometimes when you're constantly having to be on the lookout and be like, is this fake news? Is this true? Like, it's hard to know who to trust, especially then when you're getting the AI scams on top of it from these so-called trustworthy figures that are trustworthy, but their AI counterparts are not. Thanks, Meta, I suppose, for helping stop scams. They did say, I think we spoke about this on the podcast as well, like a month or two ago, that they're getting rid of all their fact checkers, though. So it's like they do one thing to help, but then at the same time, they do the opposite, unless they're going to try use AI for the fact checking.
Yeah, well, maybe this is kind of it. What, you know, they're saying, oh, we're actually looking at using tools now rather than people, which, you know, whether that the accuracy is obviously a big question. Can they perform as well as a human, like, invigilator? But also, I guess the idea is that it is mass scalable. You know, there are, if you think about the amount of users across all of Meta's products, like, you probably would have to have an insane amount of staff to be to check everything, to verify stuff, to go through all the reports. So maybe the
like
only
even
way,
just in one country,
maybe the only way that it is scalable. Although, you know, I don't agree with the mass firing of people.
It's efficiency, right? Supposedly.
Anyway, I think we've probably annoyed a lot of people on this episode. So.
Well, it's a good job it's at the end, so we can see who's really listening. Hey, we have free speech in this country, right?
Yeah. We'll find out. See if we're still here next week on Tech Girl Energy, the weekly debrief. I'm Nivi Gilder.
I'm Harriet Taylor, and you can find us on social media on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube Shorts, and Threads. It's Tech Girl Energy.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.